Do you want to start it?
I feel like you should start it.
All right, then, fine. Maybe we should start it like this, where we're both just trying to get each other to start the podcast. It's really difficult to start a podcast. Yeah. Go straight into it. Hello. Oh, my chair's squeaking. Oh, no, it's not good. Yeah.
So awkward.
Can you hear my chair squeaking?
No.
Okay, good.
I just hear you saying it.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Succession today. Or, as I call it now, Succession. What do you think about that, Claudia?
I mean, I don't know how I'm supposed to answer that.
Well, I think season 3 and season 4 aren't as good. Season 3, I think, actually is not good at all, really. Yeah, this has come out of nowhere, hasn't it? You were expecting a nice conversation where we praise Succession, but actually, no, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, you've kept this under wraps because...
No, I think what I was going to say about it was, yeah. I think season 1 and season 2 are amazing.
Yeah.
Season 3, I think like a lot of these shows, particularly sort of HBO shows and Netflix, where they want to keep them going, they get into this sort of holding pattern where there's clearly a sort of conclusion to come where everything's going to be aligned and we're going to find out the big reveal. But they don't want to do that immediately. So... like in season 3 of Succession, basically Kendall and the other kids keep sort of rising to power or like trying to, you know, usurp their dad, failing. And then you think, okay, well, that's that over. It's like, oh, no, it's not over. They regroup. And then it's like almost like one of the super ninja mutant turtles, but that's not what it is.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
You know, like when Shredder... like every week he'd have a different plan for how he's going to take over the world. It's kind of like that. Succession season 3 kind of got like that. Like every episode's like, okay, guys, what are we going to do this week to overthrow dad? And then you're like basically waiting for the dad to die. Then of course season 4, you actually get. Yeah. So I just thought season 3, it kind of dipped. And even season 4, it was good. But yeah, season 1, season 2, that's where it's at for me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I like all the seasons. Like, for me, it is a perfect show. Like, honestly, it's, to me, like, I can't say it's completely flawless because no show is. But for what I want out of a show, it just worked for me. Like, everything. I mean, and it's rare. I don't usually say that about a show. But in terms of, like, character journeys and stuff, like, as a writer, I just think it's been, like, perfect. I love season 3 and season 4.
Do you like them more than season 1 and season 2, or is it all of the same?
I actually don't have a favourite. It's like with the Shrek films, right? So everyone likes Shrek 2 more, and it's like Toy Story 2, but you couldn't have that without the first film.
I've only seen Shrek 1, but I do agree with you with Toy Story. Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3 are pretty amazing. Maybe Toy Story 3 is the best. Really? I'm like determined to rank them. You're like, no, it's all of one piece. I'm like, no, one is definitely better than the other. And in terms of Succession, 1 and 2, everyone's been praising the ending of season 4. I think what happens in the end with Tom makes a lot of sense, and it all works on paper. But I wasn't like, you said that you cried at the end of it, right? You
don't mind me. Not immediately though. It was a belated cry.
You held it together for a little while.
I held it together for most of the day. And then in the evening, I just started crying. It hit me.
Because it was over, or because of just the emotional weight of what had happened in that episode?
All of it. Like, the pain of, like, I know that, like, it wouldn't have been a happy ending for any of them to get into power anyway, because they're awful people. But in terms of, like, the abuse cycle that they went through, the fact that Kendall never escaped it just killed me. And also, Jeremy Strong actually has said that he thinks that Kendall goes on to kill himself.
I mean, this is obviously the obvious thing that will happen, or is very likely to happen in the next few days for him, is that he'll relapse quite hard in terms of drugs and that. And you could see down the line that could end in something like suicide. Sure, yeah.
That's just frightens me for his character a lot. I feel very, very connected to all of the characters, though. Like, I really feel really connected to them, but especially Kendall.
Do you think Shiv made the right decision?
She made a terrible decision, but I don't blame her because it works as her, for her character, it works. You know, so I don't think it was this great thought out smart thing. You know, it was just that younger sibling, the jealousy, the resentment, the feeling that she's been overshadowed. It's very like, I know we were talking Game of Thrones, but you know, Cersei keeps kind of, she feels overlooked. She sometimes thinks she's more intelligent than she is. So she can kind of act out like in a sort of spiteful way to kind of show her power. And to me, it just felt really real for her to do that. Like to just suddenly be like, actually, no, I'm not letting my brother have this. And I know Jesse Armstrong has said his own reading of the scene was that it wasn't like a plan from Shiv. Right. It was like an instinctive gut feeling of resentment that just overtook her.
Because she says to Kendall that he's not right for the job.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's lots of different readings you can have, though. I mean, like, there's so much, you know, when she's sitting in the boardroom for the final vote and she's kind of looking at Roman and not looking at him. And she can tell that Roman has got like bleeding stitches, doesn't really know what's going on. But you can see, you know, I love the way she plays it because you can see she's noticed it and she's thinking, what's going on here? Like, I don't know. There's so many different interpretations on what she did. But that's kind of why I think it's great as a show, because the characters have such like conflicting, like, motivations.
Yeah, you're right.
So
I mean, that's what it is at the heart, and that's what, yeah, what's really great about it. But what elevates it is that it's in this fascinating world of ultimate power, supposedly. But that's another thing that I want to talk about, is the how powerful is Logan Roy? Because there's a lot of all his kids and everyone around him throughout the show, they kind of mystify this sort of figure. They're like, he always wins, and you're like, what would Logan do, or what's he thinking, you know? And I think there's this sort of aura around him, which makes his kids basically think that they can't live up to it, but it's all their projection onto him. I don't think that he's a particularly powerful individual, because the way that I see it is that he was the right person at the right time when TV was taking off. He became a sort of TV mogul. And throughout the show, you see whenever he is actually asked about why he makes decisions or why he's been successful, he just says that he does the right thing, and not like in the moral sense, because I don't think he's got any morals particularly. But that doesn't mean that he's immoral either. Like, he doesn't care about that. He always says things like, when's the right time to do the deal? Or what's the right deal for now? You know, he's always like basically he doesn't have any agency. He just decides to do logically what the right thing is for the business in that particular point, for like the market, to be successful, to continue his success. And then because he's successful, society then like projects onto him, oh, he must be a really powerful person. He's calling all the shots.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's why Tom has always been the right successor for him, because essentially it's the same thing. I mean, Logan's skill is spotting where there's a gap in the market and knowing what people want and getting into that gap. And then once he's kind of made his way in through flattery or whatever, he retells the story. You know, like we hear from Ewan, don't we, that, you know, stories of his humble upbringing aren't necessarily what they were meant to be. But, you know, Logan doesn't have that much power. Like, you're right. I mean, I think that's a comment as well on the dysfunctional family dynamics. The kids, like, see him as, like, a god figure, right? He's everything to them. But, I mean, if Logan wasn't there, someone else would step into his place.
I think you're right, Tom. Tom understands that on some level, which is why he is the right successor. And the kids don't. They think the way to sort of usurp their dad is to make really rash, bold decisions. Mm-hmm. Which immediately blow up in their face. And Logan's just another cog in the machine.
But I got this, you know, some quotes from Logan. When he's talking to Gil, actually, in prenuptial, so this is in season one, your season, he says to Gil, I didn't make human nature, but I do know what they read and what they watch. I make my nut off what people really want. And, you know, when he's talking to Shiv in another season, he talks about how, you know, he understands the system is sexist and he's not even necessarily...
Yeah.
I don't know what his politics are, but he's saying, I didn't make the world. He's somebody who he's very much like Tom, because he is somebody who, I mean, when you look at Tom and how he's, you know, made his way up, the first time we ever see Tom is him trying to buy a watch for Logan. He's trying to work out what people in power want and to please them, right? If you can figure out what people want and what people need, you're made. And that's exactly what Logan does, you know, in his career. That's what he's done. You know, him and Tom are like, it's a natural succession. And then you've also got Greg coming up, who's kind of a natural successor to Tom.
Oh, yeah. Because... That's they should bring it back in a few years. Season 5, Greg in his like 40s or whatever, having been around the block. He's a total killer, a total shark at that point.
But then I feel like, I think it's just, I don't know. With Logan, what you were saying, like he was a man that fit in the time period, right? For what people wanted in that time period. And when Logan's talking to Kendall and he's saying, you know, you have to be a killer, but I don't know, maybe you don't. I feel like Tom is realizing that in the era we're now in with social media and optics, like they make such a big deal with Tom of showing that he can be absolutely ruthless and evil and a bully, but he's very good at becoming very likable. Like when he's discussing like letting go of Kerry, he's able to do it in a way that seems really like sweet. And, you know, we're doing this to help you. I feel like he's just as good as Logan. It's just that he understands he's in a different world. Logan's sort of person would not be in that role and of that level now. It's like,
I mean, Tom has grown up woke in a kind of woke environment, and totally cynically he knows how to work that. And Logan sees that all as weakness, when actually now that's become such a dominant way of thinking that it's become a strength. It's the same. I mean, it's just like we talked about before, that identity politics, like getting a diverse sort of group of people in to represent your, you know, political outlook. It doesn't matter what it is, but as long as on the surface you have people from all sorts of backgrounds, then that actually becomes a strength, even if it undermines in the Conservative Party, it undermines their actual values of what they want to do politically, like stuff around immigration. It still works. And Tom understands that, right? That it's a strength, it's power. The other thing is, of course, big tech is going to make the whole thing, as it does in the end, it just completely overrides everything. And Logan, like whether he died or not, I mean, he decided to go through with the deal before he died, right? Because he knew his time was up anyway. So he was handing on this doomed legacy that was always going to be eaten up.
Yeah, I mean, do you see, in obviously the end of season 3, you know, there's different readings on what Logan did, you know, like selling the company. You know, some people do read that as a bit of a mercy and in some ways an act of love, because he might have realized that it was doomed and getting it out now, getting the kids out now and just getting them their money might be the best thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much he factors in really the kids. I think he did it because, as we were saying earlier, it was the logical thing to do as a business person that was to sell at that point. And he, as I say, I don't think he really has any power at all. He's got no agency. And that's what gives him his really high status and position. Like if you decide to act out in this world and make your own choices and not and sort of go against all of the kind of models that are put out for you, then you're very at risk of being totally alienated and totally on the outside and on the fringes. And I guess that's kind of, I would say, where his brother sees himself. But I we'll talk about that in a minute. But I don't think that he really fully understands that. He sort of half understands that about Logan. But he also, his brother also blames Logan a lot for, like, I think he says in the episode when they go to Dundee that Logan is maybe like the person most single-handedly to blame for climate annihilation or something.
Yeah.
Totally misunderstands that if Logan wasn't there, someone else would be running that TV channel. And Logan only pushes those points, because as you said before, because that's what he thinks people want.
Mm-hmm.
But when he says to Gil, I give people what they want, I think he really believes that. But that's because he's so involved in this market logic. What he gives people is what's easiest to get or to give, I suppose, in a capitalist, in a sort of late capitalist economy, like, and that's what he thinks people want, but it's actually just the easiest thing that's transactional. And obviously challenging that, which is sort of what Gil's character is going to do, is an uphill battle. But there's lots of things that people possibly want more than that, but that it's not on offer, or it's very hard to attain, or we're not kind of raised in a society that thinks that it's even possible.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel that way. I mean, I know I'm kind of going all over the place with this, but, you know, when we look at season four and we look at Menken, for example, you know, I feel like he's very successful in the sphere he's in. He gets to that point because, I mean, I was looking at an interview with Justin Kirk, who plays him, and he was saying that Menken actually believes, right? He has ideology. He is somebody who's not actually playing the game, you know, just to get to power. He genuinely believes. And the fact he's cut through because everyone else is just doing what they think is meant to be done and they're kind of going through the motions. I almost wonder if seeing him rise through that can be read as like a sort of almost hopeful thing for people on the left. Because it might be that people who actually, I mean, we've got two options, right? In a world where the kind of, there's the center and then there's the Dems and there's the Republicans and you've got Labour and the Tories here. It takes somebody on the outside, right, being sincere to get through to the people. And I feel like it's a choice, like, because Menken is popular.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good reading of that with Trump, for all the downside of Trump. A lot of the stuff he was saying was quite positive.
I mean, you could say that a lot of that came out because people could see that there was this system that was never changing and was just going through the motions. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to cling to the fact that the left could do that.
I'm not sure hopeful exactly, but certainly.
I just think it tells you that there is an unarmed bias because of my own politics, but I think there is a way through to get through these big power structures if you believe and you have actual policy and you don't just play the game. And, you know, the right do that all the time, like the far right, and it's really scary. But I mean, there's the possibility there, you know, for the left to do that, because everyone is just tired. You know, that's why these right-wing figures, these populist figures, get so popular, right? Because everyone's just tired of this this endless swinging pendulum where nothing changes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, so there was a really interesting bit in Tailgate Party. So I wanted to read this. It was a bit of dialogue that Shiv has, which I thought you'd find interesting, which is them kind of discussing the sort of different political people they've got at their party. So Shiv says, okay, yeah, sure, spread those surveillance capitalism heebie-jeebies. I just don't want to get stuck with the journal op-ed ogres. And then Kendall says, come on, they're not all crypto-fascist and right-wing nutjobs. We also have some venture capital Dems and centrist ghouls. Dad's ideological range was wide.
It's a sort of apolitical feeling in the, like, so Kendall and Shiv basically hate everybody that's there. And presumably would hate anyone who's not there even more because they're not even invited.
Yeah.
So it's like they sort of, and I think that's, there's quite a kind of populist feeling of that, I think, in sort of centrist liberal politics that's been going on for a while, pre-Brexit, pre-Corbyn and all that. It was there, but it's kind of safe because the idea is, well, what are you going to do? Yeah, of course we all hate both parties, we both hate both leaders. Very few people vote. It's all bullshit. It's, you know, everyone's sleazy, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? And then you have, like, you know, that's why I was always said about whether I got news for you. That's their position. And then if anything actually does happen, like you have some significant change in the Labour Party, that's seen as even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So with Shiv and Kendall, they're very cynical about all of the major players that are at their party, but they would absolutely hate anything else to happen, anyone else to come. Because like Shiv goes with Gil early on, but it's purely to spite her dad.
Right. Then, I mean, she's probably the worst politically, because she really is playing it all like it's a game. I mean, I don't know how you feel about the siblings, but I feel the most comfortable with Roman, even though he's further to the right, because he's not pretending.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just such a comment as well on the fact that Roman is obviously the most empathetic of the siblings. Like, he is on a personal level the most sensitive. he shows these moments of kindness, which he kind of cuts off.
Does
but,
he?
You know, oh yeah, yeah. I would absolutely say Roman has got the most kindness out of those, the three main, not Connor. Connor's probably the kindest. But yeah, I mean, Roman actually feels things really deeply. Like he goes to Kerry when she's being kicked out of the party. You know, he's the one who feels connected to his father on an emotional level. Like the other two are kind of angry with him, but he's still texting his dad. Like he still loves him very much. And I kind of really like that they're giving you this character. I mean, all of them, I guess, you're seeing they've got potential positive qualities, but especially Roman, who's quite vulnerable and sensitive. The way he's manipulated by Menken.
He's very,
he's
so insecure, though, that he lashes out and he is incredibly mean in a way that, which is interesting, Kendall right at the end lashes out. They all lash out at Roman, the other siblings. Mm. That's the only person they're ever sort of physically attack or kind of really rude to, apart from maybe Shiv and Tom's relationship.
Mm.
But Roman will basically lash out at anybody, any subordinate person around at any time. He just treats people like shit because you know, shit trickles down and he gets treated by shit by everyone around him. But he's got no kind of discipline in that regard. Like, he'll immediately offload any sort of stuff that's happened to him on people around him.
I would say that, obviously, I mean, Roman is obviously the scapegoat of his family dynamic and the family system. But I would also say that in terms of the ending, I mean, he has the most hopeful ending because he is the only one of the main three siblings which breaks the cycle of abuse.
He's the only one smiling.
It's not even the smile. It's the fact that when in that last scene where Shiv is kind of turning on Kendall, if you'll notice, you know, he actually draws Kendall's fire when Kendall is yelling at Shiv. He says things that are deliberately offensive to Kendall that he doesn't even mean, to draw his fire away from the weaker person because Shiv is pregnant.
Mm.
He takes that on. And then when Kendall's hurting him, Shiv doesn't really do much to help Roman. She tries to leave. And then Kendall goes for Shiv. And then that's when Roman grabs him and says, "She's pregnant, you piece of, you know, swear word." You know, his final act in that show was refusing to let someone else be the scapegoat. He's broken it because all his life he's been that lowest rung. And that's why he's taken out on lower people to try and feel more power. Like that scene with the kid when we first meet Roman.
Yeah.
But in that moment, his younger sibling, he could have piled up with Kendall and been fine. But he makes the choice to protect the most vulnerable person in the room, in his view.
I hadn't thought about that. You know, it's a good observation. I had noticed.
I'm so interested in their childhood dynamic as well. Like there's an episode when it's Tom's bachelor party, actually, first of all, I'm thinking of. And him and Roman are in the lift together. And we've had that bit of dialogue from Connor and Kendall about how Logan's theory was you have two dogs, you send the weak one away, you make them fight each other. There's a scene that makes so much sense now with the finale. There's a moment in a lift where Kendall like barges Roman.
But it's
so cold and scary that for a moment, like that episode to me is a masterpiece because you're constantly wondering what their childhood was like. And I very much think that Kendall abused Roman when they were growing up, like in a kind of physical sense, because of their father. And that's always at play with them. And I feel like that's always been inside Kendall. It's been like the whole show has been the two Kendalls, right? Because he's also got a protective instinct. Like when his dad hits Roman, he wants to stop it. But there's always been that kind of violence in Kendall, which, like you say, is quite scary because he's quite still as a character. So I think it's even more scary when he kicks off. With Logan, you know he's like yelling. And with Kendall, you can imagine Kendall murdering a person.
Yeah. Well, Logan's in touch with his anger.
Yeah.
And he expresses it. Which, you know, he's got an unhealthy anger, but he's got a healthy expression of that anger. Whereas you don't see... Kendall is equally as fucked up and angry, but he has no way of expressing it. So yeah, when it comes out, it's pretty horrific. And I think, in terms of Roman being bullied, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I sort of throughout the first two seasons, I would say, probably not the third, probably not in that one at all, just the good ones. Roman asks his older brothers about stuff. Like one of them is him being in a dog cage or something and eating dog food. And yeah. he's told, oh, no, that was a game you liked to play and it was just chocolate. And there's another thing of like him, I think, going to military school.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah. And yep. he's like, oh, they sent me to military school because they hate me, or Logan hates me. And he's like, no, you wanted to go. That was your. So it's almost this kind of gaslighting kind of thing going on, where you're not really sure, because it also could be the case that Roman wants to like be the downtrodden person, and so does re-remember stuff. You just don't know, which I think, it's interesting. I think
the ending actually puts a whole different slant on all of it. I think that watching the end with Kendall, the way when the caterer that dies is brought up and he says, which, who,
oh, yeah.
and he's denying it. I think throughout the season, I think we've not really been sure who to believe on things. I think Roman has always been a truthful character. You know, isn't the episode called It's With Open Eyes or something, isn't it? He sees through things. He speaks truth that are uncomfortable. I think Roman's always been telling the truth about that stuff personally.
Right.
And I think seeing that stuff in that last scene, I wonder if Roman maybe realizes the fact that he's been gaslit this whole time. I'm definitely struck by when Logan hits Roman in the car, and the day after, you know, Logan rewrites what happened while he's there, and Roman goes along with it. It's like Roman is almost being taught to like think, oh, it wasn't even that bad, it's fine. You know, he's like, oh, I didn't even make contact, did I? I don't know. It's scary. I think Roman is a truth teller in the family, and I think that's partly what made me sad at the end as well, because I don't want to see Kendall like that, really.
Yeah. But I wasn't surprised by Kendall.
No.
And you're right. There is, and I've always, you do like Roman, because there's some humanity there that just isn't in anyone else in that family. All and any of the people that they decide to date or marry, or it's just like horrible people, you know, creating children with horrible people.
Rava's okay. I like Rava, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So that was the thing I was going to say about the political angle of it is like, so the whole thing with Menken is that he's this tyrant, and that's what the sort of liberally left kind of people like Rava believe. And there's some kind of, obviously there's some evidence to that, where she says that their kid gets sort of pushed in the street. Mm. But there's also a kind of trying to link that. So the person that pushes her kid was wearing, he was wearing like a Menken hat or something.
Yeah.
And she becomes so worried that she wants to leave the city. And I wonder if that, I mean, there was an overreaction with sort of Trump becoming president, I think, in the same regard. And I think for the kids, a lot of what's really interesting about the election night episode is they realize that they can call the election, and none of them are really Menken fans, maybe apart from Roman. Although I think Roman, it's more the fact that he's gotten in with this guy and he's finally got a bit of status, rather than he's actually politically aligned with him. But they all, you know, earlier in the season were like, we're going to take over the company. We're going to change it. We're not going to run it like Dad run it, like Logan ran it. And then when it comes to the crunch, they end up getting this far right guy in, you know, by swinging the election. But the reason they do that is the same sort of market logic that Logan would have taken, which is that they had to do it in order to kill the deal. So they realize even when they've got power, they've got no power, right? But then they justify it to themselves. And you see Roman kind of going back and forth. You see Kendall going back and forth. Roman is pretty much convinced that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who wins. And Kendall's like, Kendall, on the one hand, wants to believe it doesn't matter, but then on the other hand, he's like overawed by the power that he has. And that's really that kind of conflict where, does he have any power? He believes that this position that his dad has had his whole life is so powerful. And now he's in that position. He wants to believe that he has a lot of power, that this position has power. But then he also doesn't want to believe it because he's going to make this horrible decision. And he wants to imagine it doesn't matter who becomes president, and it's all just a kind of, so he's like torn between these two things that he really wants to believe in. And I think that episode, I think, is a really interesting kind of like look at how that works in terms of, yeah, the way that we invest a lot of meaning in the two-party system and who becomes president, rarely to do with what's actually going on in terms of the sort of policies they might bring in or eventually do bring in, and much more to kind of justify positions that we want to take.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, with Shiv, I mean, she's a Democrat. She says she's a Democrat, but she doesn't politically believe it at all, does she?
Sells out Gill immediately to get a job back with her dad at a far-right news network, you know.
Well, it's like, you know, she doesn't want to be in the photograph with Mencken, I believe, in season three. But she'll deal with him, you know. It's all optics. But I do think something that runs through the season, which I appreciate it on two levels, you know, like the dysfunctional abusive family element, but also the political level. And I feel like it's the same system, right? It's this idea that nobody's quite sure what's real. That is something that always runs through the show. Yeah. You know, the characters are always asking each other, is this real? Was that real? Are we real? Like,
well,
what's real
Kendall
here?
Tells Roman that he's not real, that he's not a real person.
Right. That's the biggest thing that runs through the season. And you get that in abuse systems, you know, in abusive families, you're made to feel like you don't know if you're real and what's real and actions and consequences and stuff. But also politically, none of these characters are grounded in the world. They don't feel like they have roots because nothing they do feels like it really has consequence for them at all.
The other thing about that decision, just to add to that, is they decide to get Mencken in on a really dodgy circumstance. It turns out that it can't stop the deal anyway. It's so inevitable that big tech is going to take over, really, that they're just kind of buying for time. And if they'd gone with the Democrat, it would have played out the same way.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, they just have to constantly make the decision which is best for the business. You know, I suppose I haven't really thought about it. I always tend to think about it more in terms of family dynamics, but that makes complete sense. What you said, you know, is making me think about everything Logan did, actually, in a new kind of light. You know, the fact that he has zero power whatsoever. You know, I always knew his power was an illusion for the kids, but I don't think I'd appreciated just how the power stops if he makes a decision based on what he wants.
Right.
It has to be what he thinks people want or what people need or what will be useful. You know, he's just a yes man who's risen up, right? He's not this conqueror. He's not this brave free thinker.
And at all. On one side of a two-party divide, right? And so you see the people that the Pierce family, they sort of, you know, they love to sort of brag about their liberal politics, but it's so you see they don't care about that either. They're just as cynical about it, but they're on that side. And as what's happened in real life with Fox and CNN, the neoliberal consensus is kind of basically fucked. So you've got a polarization of the parties. The media have kind of gone along with that, sort of kicking and screaming, but they've gone along with it because what else are they going to do? So like Murdoch didn't back Trump initially, then he did. So then Fox backed Trump, and then CNN went sort of hyper-partisan towards the Democrats. And it's not really, the decisions aren't being made by people like Rupert Murdoch. There's a kind of much bigger systemic problem that they're just reacting to. And I think people like Shiv, well, all of them think that if they can get in that position of power, they can change things. It's a bit like Game of Thrones in that respect, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know Shiv is always lying to herself, isn't she? Because she's married to the head of ATN, you know, but, oh, I'm only doing it because, you know, I have to do it. I'm having to save things. And I don't know. I think that election episode is one of my favorite Succession episodes. I know you weren't a huge fan of season four, but that episode,
what you saying about the last episode really got me thinking that I really sort of just missed a lot of what was going on.
I don't know. Well, I'm only thinking in terms of like family dynamic. I feel like we're both getting a new appreciation because I feel like you came at this from a very political lens, which my brain wasn't connecting.
That's the thing, it works on it. It's got all sorts going on. But I want to talk about Ewan quickly. Because I think there's everybody sort of hates the family. I think what's interesting about when I look at this show, I was thinking about Sex and the City, which I don't know, do you ever watch that?
No.
All right. Okay. Well, I watched it quite a lot when I was younger, and it's like, the thing about it is, it's Sex and City is that 90s aspirational television, and it's actually not too dissimilar world. It's different because a lot of the people in it go out with billionaires. They're in the sort of Manhattan, not the top, you know, echelons of like Succession, but they're just below it. They're kind of like, I guess, Tom, the husbands and the wives and stuff. They're people that are trying to get into this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very aspirational. They're kind of upper middle class people, but you're supposed to be able to relate to them. They're sort of living their life in Manhattan, but they're going on dates with billionaires and bankers and exciting artists and stuff. And it's very sort of positive. And even though like there is a lot of cynicism in it, you're also supposed to relate to them and want them to be happily married to a billionaire by the end of the show. Whereas in things like Succession, like none of the characters are likable. We're supposed to hate absolutely everybody and everything that's going on and not aspire to this at all.
Yeah, I mean, I know in terms of the directing of Succession, they really wanted to, they wanted to portray wealth, but in a way that didn't glamorize it. So they always wanted to make sure that the spaces looked uncomfortable. So like the rooms the characters sit in, they are never comfortable rooms. The colors are muted.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah,
Flat,
like Kendall and Roman's flats are really horrible. Like there's no personality to them.
They literally, I mean, this is kind of what you were saying really about Logan just being a person who kind of steps into the role and doesn't have power. They designed them to be like personalityless. So any other rich person could just step in and live there. There's nothing in it that defines the characters. The only thing they ever did for Kendall was they put an artwork on the wall, which is kind of a quite depressing kind of abstract artwork. But even that's very cold. You know, they did not want people to think that this was glamorizing. And I get frustrated because I think some people have watched the show and I think it is trying to glamorize it. But I personally feel like it seems like absolute hell and I would not want to be part of it. Like nobody's happy at all.
The difference I think is with the 90s aspirational, it was a kind of a political environment where people felt like them or their kids would generally be working towards a better life, not going to be billionaires, but moving up, right? Whereas now it feels very, I mean, basically there's a sort of decline in living standards, but the feeling, you know, the sort of optimistic feeling is that we're stuck, we're a fixed position, and these are the people at the top. And so you wouldn't make a show about wanting to be those people because you can't be them anyway. So I mean, a lot of the comparisons are made to Dynasty in the 80s, which is similar, just awful rich people being awful all the time. White Lotus as well, I think, fits into that nicely. But yeah, what I was going to say about Ewan, so Logan's brother, he becomes a bit like the sort of pressure valve for the audience as this kind of character that totally rejects his brother's path in life. But his brother, for whatever reason, has put him on the board of Royco or Waystar or whatever. So at any crucial moment, and obviously any family get together, he turns up and gives a speech, basically just lambasting at everybody and everything that's going on. And it is, he's great. He's really funny. He's obviously quite well-read. And obviously, I can't remember the actor plays him, but he's got a great voice, like Logan himself. And so he gives these really, really great speeches. But I do think he has this very sort of liberal viewpoint where he thinks that Logan has basically made the world a worse place. And like all the rest of the family, he imbues this power on Logan. Logan is a powerful guy. He's a big actor in the world. And whatever he'd done with his life, he was going to do something amazing. And he decided to take this dark path. Whereas I guess what I was saying, you know, I think you might agree with me on this, is that basically the only way he's become this is by taking that dark path. The dark path is the path of success. It's the path of least resistance. If you want to be a successful person, that's what he's done. And that's why he's in that position. And if he'd done anything else, if he'd taken Ewan's advice, he wouldn't have got there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Ewan is supposed to be, he's kind of, I still think Roman is our most truthful character, but Ewan comes in rather sometimes as well and gives a little bit more honesty and truth. But I mean, even Ewan, when you think about the way he's treated Greg and his daughter, he's kind of been a bit of a hypocrite himself as well. Greg is homeless at the start of the show. He's living in a hostel. He has no money. His grandfather is like, that's how Greg is like groomed in, this everyman, you know, and Tom gets hold of him and starts him on this evil path because he doesn't have any money. His grandfather believed he went so far, I don't know, he kind of wanted him to have to work for everything to the extent that he let his daughter get into extreme debt, because we find out in the show that Greg's been making this money so that his mum isn't in debt anymore. And, you know, he doesn't have to live in a hostel. So, yeah. But I also, on a family dynamic level, they are fascinating. His relationship with Logan really, really fascinates me, because those are two very abused kids who have a very strong bond. And it's just an unbroken bond. I love how no matter what happens, Ewan always votes with his brother.
Well, he says at the end, when Logan's dead, I can't remember exactly what he says in the vote, but it's something like some kind of idiom about like, don't rock the boat, something like that. So he votes with Kendall, right? And you think that's been his motto all along, which is basically don't get involved.
Right.
He's been on the board the whole time. He talks, you know, quite sort of lofty about Logan's bad decisions and what he's done to the world. But he decided not to involve himself in any of it. As you say, always vote with his brother, not do anything apart from turn up to the meetings. So he's kind of taken himself out of the position that he's actually been afforded by his brother to actually have quite a big sort of, he could be a big player in what's going on, much like Logan's son's attempt to be. But he decides that, and that's what I was talking about where Ewan doesn't quite understand. Like, on the one hand, he thinks his brother has all of this sort of power to change the world. Yet he himself kind of realizes that he doesn't, and he couldn't do anything if he tried. But he doesn't connect those two things at all. I don't know.
No, I mean, I feel like his role of stepping back, I mean, he's very judgmental of Logan, and you know, that's right to be judgmental of Logan, but I feel like he says to Greg about, oh, this is a nest of vipers, etc. It's notable in a family dynamic way as well. He doesn't do anything to help Shiv or Roman or Kendall when they're growing up. He's got no relationship with them. You know, it really hurts me, like, when he first comes to, you know, pre-vote and Kendall's trying to get him on side, Kendall's trying to connect with him on a human level, and Ewan gives him nothing. You know, yeah. Greg tries to connect with Ewan, and he gives him absolutely nothing.
A great scene.
He's had opportunities to positively influence people and make a difference, but he's ducked out of those chances. And he kind of holds the moral high ground in his head, but he hasn't protected anyone. You know,
off the top of my head, I'm just thinking, again, it could be, he's basically justifying, I mean, if you look at it, his sibling rivalry is this total kind of, the power dynamic is just totally off. He's not really done much with his life, and his brother is one of the most important people in the world. And how can he justify that to himself? So he may not really believe in what he's saying, but he, you know, much like the Pierce family take their position, or Shiv takes her political position to go with Gil, it's a convenient way of like, well, actually, I can lord it over my brother because I'm morally superior.
You've just given me a connection in my head. I've just thought something. Right. When, you know, Roman stitches, it's like that. I've just realized, you know how Roman is saying to Kendall, he's basically on that scene without saying it, asking Kendall, like, he needs people to see a reason why it couldn't be him. If it's going to be Kendall, people have to see, and he wants himself to at least look injured or something. I've never thought about that. That's what Ewan's doing, right? He's taken that other line as an excuse to say, anyway, that's why it wasn't me, because I wouldn't have wanted it anyway, and I'm against the whole thing.
Yeah, and I guess that sort of fits into that confused message of, well, he wouldn't want it because he knows to get to that position, you have to do the dark arts. Logan didn't have any choice. I mean, the choice that Logan has, and I suppose that Ewan can hold over him, is that he decided to go into this world and decided and had the ambition to get to the top of it. Mm. And in a way, that's like, the ultimate sort of, you know, damnation of Logan, and kind of what Logan doesn't want for his kids, but they're so desperate to do, is to follow in his tracks, which there's no good can come of it, I guess, is the message, which I suppose is quite, left-wing.
It is quite, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's appropriately kind of like doom and gloom and negative. That's definitely left-wing.
I think they show moments of hope, though. Like, you know, if we can see as viewers...
Yeah, right-wing hope.
No, like...
That's what it's all about. Left-wing despair and right-wing hope.
No, there's hope, though, because, like, you know, that speech Ewan does at the funeral when he talks about Logan being a sad, lost little child who's abused and the person he became. And then they cut to that shot of Kendall and Roman, right? The two versions of Logan sitting in that church.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there are so many opportunities. I get the impression Ewan has a lot of guilt because he didn't protect his brother when they were younger.
Right.
Because Logan was the Roman.
Yeah.
Right? Even though Kendall's the heir, Logan was the Roman character. So Ewan from the start has been a character that seems to back out and let someone else get hit, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, it is depressing.
Yeah, very depressing. Yeah, I might cry now. Now that I finally understand the last episode. Well, you haven't talked about Tom.
We can talk about Tom.
Tom is... it kind of reminds me, I mean, you're talking about sort of Shakespeare tragedy. Him and Greg are always like, they're like the sort of secondary characters, like the court jester or whatever, who's having a side story to the main action, and sort of just like running around hitting each other. Like, they're always, when the other characters are off stage, it's the Greg and Tom time. It's like a little comedy break.
I mean, I definitely feel like Tom and Greg are the weirdest, greatest, strangest love story I've ever seen on television. I can't even define that relationship. It defies any category. It's just so weird.
What do you think Greg makes of it all?
I think that Greg really... I don't want to talk like too much of a shipper here. I think Greg really, really likes Tom a lot, in the way that a sugar baby might like a sugar... I saw one saying on Twitter. You know, in the final scene with Greg, that he has to look away because he's mustering up the biggest, wettest eyes of his sugar baby career. They have kind of got that sort of relationship to me. Like, Greg knows that he can get whatever he wants. Like, he'll never have to pay for anything again in his whole life now.
Right, but we obviously, there is the idea that Tom fancies Greg, right?
100%. I mean, I would say that's pretty, like... And I know I've said this on Twitter. Tom does not realize that he's a gay man.
Yeah. It's a good theory. And
he really doesn't, like...
But... Does Greg realize that? I don't think so.
I think Greg openly flirts with Tom, right? He's always doing the hair thing. He's doing the big eyes. I think Greg is on the make, and I think Greg...
You think Greg's actually much smarter than he makes out?
100%. I think he's like Tom was before, you know, because Tom came out of nowhere, ended up with Shiv. I do think he loves Shiv, but... You know, he made his way in. He sees what people want and what people need. That's what he becomes. I mean, that's what Greg became for Tom, right?
Yeah.
He saw that Tom felt isolated. He saw that there were problems between Shiv and Tom. Greg gave Tom everything he needed, playing subservient the whole time. But it's like, they have that in common. They're both really good at doing that.
Yeah. What you want to see is, right, the last scene of the show... You want to see Greg like walk out of an office and just his face go completely cold, and you see this totally other side to Greg where he's a complete tyrant. And then,
yeah, absolutely. It's the cycle of abuse again, though, right? It's like Shiv, the way Shiv is to Tom, Tom then kind of passes that down to Greg. Although I would say there's a comment on like patriarchy and sexism, because I feel like Tom and Greg have reached a weird sort of equality state in a sort of brotherhood in that system. that Shiv could never really infiltrate. Because Greg has seduced his way up, essentially, but without having to resort to anything sexual. Like, he has seduced his way up in a patriarchal system, right? Because he flirts, right? That's his whole thing. And that's Tom's whole thing. That's how he got so high up with Logan. It's like flirting in a non-sexual way.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Flirting, I mean, it's charming, right? It wouldn't be flirting with Logan because Logan's not attracted to Tom. But he's attracted to the fact that Tom is sort of dutifully, like, respectful of his position and stuff, whereas his kids are always kind of poking him with a stick, you know. So he's like, he's charmed his way. And I guess, you know, flirting, charming is obviously quite a mixed bag, but, you know, the extra element of flirting is some sort of maybe sexual desire or just sort of attractiveness physically. But obviously that isn't there with Logan.
Yeah.
But it is there with Tom when it comes to Greg, for sure.
Right. I feel like I'm so glad that everyone sees that, because I think yours
was the first tweet, like, I saw that and I thought, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But then now I see it everywhere. I don't know who came up with
all
that.
All their interactions are so insanely romantic.
But has this been like something that people have been talking about for ages? I've not been enough on the Succession Reddits, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a question of, like...
I've only been on Succession Reddits to talk about Gil, and where's Gil gone? I've not been following the main story.
No, there is a thriving Tom and Greg.
Right, right. A lot of fan fiction.
Are you writing some, right? I'm writing some fiction, yeah. Basically, I wanted to... I'm not accepting that Kendall's going to die, and I'm repairing it.
So what's Kendall going to do?
I don't want to give away too many spoilers.
All right, sorry. We'll give away, like, a sort of tagline, not a spoiler, but something that can get people interested.
Kendall tries to go into the Hudson, and it brings some of the siblings together, is what I'll say. It's just to make people feel better, to whom Kendall is, like, you know, their comfort character, and they want to believe that he's all right in the end. He'll be fine. There's a lot of Tom and Greg, because Tom and Greg always works his way in for me. Like, I love writing for them.
Is it explicit Tom and Greg material?
No, I almost feel like making explicit Tom and Greg material would take away something from the weirdness. Like, you can't even define, it's something
that's
beyond.
True. Yeah.
It's beyond the romantic or the sexual. It's like weird codependence.
Well,
like
that's that really amazing exchange between them, where really early on, when Tom mentions the story of Nero and Sporus,
and it's
just so bizarre. And it's funny because I didn't really even connect it then at all, but yeah, it's so on the nose what Tom's saying. And obviously, and that's the thing. So Greg, he's that classic line, that he's talking about, like, fucking Roman history, and Greg says, oh, this is not IP I'm familiar with. Which is, and it just, like, totally goes over his head, or it seems to. It's obviously quite awkward for Greg, but he seems to not really understand what's being said to him. But maybe he does. Maybe he's just playing dumb the whole time. He's like a sort of the classic sort of playing the dumb blonde of, like, yesteryear, but as a really tall, dark-haired man. Because the stuff he does with the translate from the Swedes is genius and really sly and underhand, right? I can't remember what's the second last episode or something. Yeah. All right, I think that's it. Now we've definitely covered everything. We've covered Tom.
I'm so glad we got Tom and Greg in there, and my fan fiction. Yeah. And when it's, you know, I'll have to update people on the podcast when it goes up.
When is it coming out? Is it being published? Have you got
I'll probably put it on the old AO3.
Well, have you got a name? Is it going to be a series, or is it just one story?
It's going to be a section of chapters, different chapters. And I'm going to be using a title from the poem that all the series finales from Succession are from.
Which is?
It's from Dream Song 29 by John. Do you not know that?
No, I didn't know it was... So yeah, yeah. I just didn't invest enough in the last season. I missed everything.
So Dream Song 29 is where Jesse Armstrong gets all his series finale quotes from, because this short poem basically describes Kendall, I guess. And if anyone listening to this or watching it wants to look up Dream Song 29, it's wonderful. And you may find, I'm going to find a title for my story in there somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and your favorite character before we go?
Favorite character? Probably Roman. Maybe, yeah. Greg. What about you?
Kendall, Tom, or Roman for me, I think.
Kendall?
Yeah, Kendall has a very, very big place in my heart, and I'm just gutted that he's gone the way he has. I care so much for Kendall. I feel like I could, like, adopt any... I'm not much younger than them all, but I could adopt any of the kids.
I like Kendall when you would go off on one. Like, the episode where he goes around to those people's house and has a relapse is really... That's fun. I like fun Kendall. I'd be, and like, such an enabler if I was Kendall's friend. I was like, come on, Kendall, let's just do some crack.
I was just saying, like, for the listeners and the viewers before we started, that I think if you were a character in Succession, you'd be Nate.
Yeah.
I want to throw that out to the public.
Yeah. Okay.
And say that's where I'd align you, I think.
Yeah.
With the Succession, yeah, characters. So
I don't know. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, it's the only borderline all right person in the show. So I'm like, well, okay, let me compliment you with some, and I was like, well, who the fuck? The only one's like that stupid wife of the older brother, because she seems quite nice.
I'm happy. I do that. You know when Willa's going through the Logan's medals and she's just smiling and she's like, oh, that looks really nice. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Would you like the show to come back?
No.
No.
No way. No, it's finished. Like, I hate when a show drags on longer. The arcs have been completed now.
It will come back, you know.
No.
It will. Market logic dictates. Logan says it will. I mean, I think it won't under Jesse Armstrong, probably. But
I can see a spin-off, but yeah, it can't, like, yeah, yeah. The Tom and Greg like spin-off.
Or 10 years, they'll do some bullshit.
But maybe they need to do, like, the Tom and Shiv demon baby versus Sophie and Iverson. And if Roman has a kid or something, and it's them fighting each other.
Well, just in a pit. All right, let's end this. We definitely must have done that. Also, my laptop's running out of battery, so.
Okay. Bye.